This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
I wake in the morning, I wait on the Lord, and I ask Him to give me the strength to do right by our country. And when I go to bed at night, I wait on the Lord, and I ask Him to forgive me my sins.
Why are we doing this? Why get in shape? The Father made your body, Jesus paid for your body, and the Spirit lives in your body, so you better take care of it.
There's going to be a lot of skinny people in hell, and the size of their body or their body mass index is not going to be the standard by which Christ judges people on the last day.
We have no business going up to Christ. He comes down to us. Where the sinner is, in the gutter, in the grave, Christ comes to us and gives us His grace.
Duluth, Minnesota letter carriers, love, Issues, etc.
There's no doubt about it. If you have ever met a regular old temple, devout, faithful Mormon, you're dealing, generally speaking, with some of the nicest people you'll ever want to meet. The latest ad campaign on television, I'm a Mormon, or And I'm a Mormon, you've seen those commercials. These are the kind of people, and they suck me in every single time. It's the kind of person you'd want to work with, the kind of person you'd want to live next door to. Mormons make a point of being nice people, kind people, doing good things for other folks. It's not always about the Mormonism, but there is a technique called friendshipping with a long history in Mormonism, and something called missionary dating, which is even stranger in Mormonism, that we're going to talk about here in this half hour of Issues Etc. A little bit later on this Tuesday afternoon, February the 8th, we'll talk about abortion and natural law with Dr. Corey Moss. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Joining us to talk about Mormon friendshipping and missionary dating, Eric Johnson. He's associate for Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, co-author of the book Mormonism 101, and he's also written an article in the recent edition of the Christian Research Journal titled Converting Them Softly with Their Words. Eric, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
Tell us your story about when you moved to Utah and the kind of treatment you got from one of your Mormon neighbors.
Well, we moved on a moving truck, and we came in on a Saturday night really late, like 2 in the morning, and we decided not to even try to unload it. So we knew some friends were coming over the next morning on a Sunday, which is a sacred day. In my neighborhood is probably 70 to 80% Latter-day Saints, but we knew that we had do that to be able to get the truck out of the way. So when the next day came, we opened it up, and we're starting to move things. It's a 24-foot, 27-foot truck, just crammed to the gills. And you know, having more people would be nice, but I had like 3 or 4 people who were helping. And around the corner came a neighbor, and he had on work gloves and his work pants. And I knew this man when I bought the house. He was very friendly, and I knew him as a faithful Latter-day Saint. And he said, could I help you? And I was really surprised because I know that Sunday is a very important day for them. And he ended up helping us out for the next 3 hours and was one of the hardest workers. When people were taking breaks, he wouldn't take a break. He just kept on working.
So,
and that's kind of how that all started, and that's developed into a very good a relationship of friendship since then.
Now, this may or may not be an example of what has been a longstanding practice among American Mormons, at least since the 70s, of so-called friendshipping. Where did it begin, and what exactly is it?
Well, it's been a word that is a self-coined word Mormons have used over the years. And basically what this is, it's emphasizing the friendship that you would have with your neighbors to be able to build relationships so that you might be able to help them better understand what Mormonism is all about, usually with non-Mormons, but also could be with fringe Mormons. We would call them, perhaps they call themselves Jack Mormons. And so trying to be friendly and to try to win the ability to have missionaries come over And so this is something that's been going on for a very long time. And you mentioned my neighbor. As things went on, as time went on, I really don't think he was necessarily friendshipping. I think he was just being a good neighbor, which is something I think everybody needs to do. But they have had actually used that term to encourage their people to develop friendships for the purpose of possibly getting them to take missionary lessons. And that's completely documented within their own works, their own magazines.
One of the phrases that you and I quote from memory, so it may not be accurate. One of the phrases you cite in your article is, we need to warm our neighbors before we can properly warn our neighbors. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, that was said by a youth magazine, Friend Magazine, in 1986. And it said this exactly. President Spencer Kimball said that we usually must warm our neighbors before we can warn them properly, and that we should friendship and fellowship, not scold and scare them. How can you show love to your non-member friends and neighbors? Little kindnesses will help friends feel good about our church. They will warm up to the idea of learning more about the teachings of the church. And what that's saying is, and I think this is a good strategy even for Christians. Before we start sharing the gospel, I think we need to meet known needs. And so just to develop that. But this is a very interesting quote because, yeah, I like what they say. Warm before warn. Warn them about the dangers of not becoming Latter-day Saints and the privileges that come with Mormonism. And so that very much is stressed in that kind of a teaching.
Well, officially or unofficially, this has kind of become the accepted strategy for the Mormon Church, and that is to kind of portray themselves as the person you want to live next door to. I watch these new I Am a Mormon commercials on television. They were running in higher rotation a couple months ago, but they're still out there. And they catch me every single time. Even though I know that they're coming, every single time they catch me with watching this thing, well, who is this person? They seem like a quite interesting person. And they end with the tagline, and I'm a Mormon. And the kind of people you'd like to work with, kind of people you'd like to live next door to.
Oh, absolutely. And living now in Utah, after living all my life in Southern California, I have to say the people here genuinely are nice people who care about other people. They're very friendly when there's a need. It seems like neighbors come to the rescue. In the grocery store, people don't cut in line as much as what I saw before. Mormons are great people. I think that's something that a lot of people, when they label a ministry like what I'm involved with, Mormonism Research Ministry, they like to use the term anti-Mormon. And I think that's not a very nice word, because an anti-Mormon, a Mormon is a person. And to say you're an anti-Mormon, you're against a person, absolutely not. People like what we do with people involved with ministries like ours at Mormonism Research Ministry are very much in love with people. And we want people to be able to see the truth. And so it makes it difficult, because a lot of Christians would say, just leave them alone, they're fine on their own. But if their gospel is different than what the Bible teaches, then they're just as lost as the Islamic person in Afghanistan or a Hindu person in India.
So what would be the next step, from what you know of Mormonism and its technique, if someone were to befriend a non-Mormon? They have them not only as a genuine friend, but then perhaps at some point interested in the Mormon message. What would be the next step for the Mormon Church with that person?
Well, when you're in that kind of a friendship, where friendshipping is going on, they're going to try to have missionaries come and be able to explain the gospel. And they're going to do little things to try to entice you to want to understand better of what the religion is all about. As far as my friend that has become not only a good neighbor but a friend, we go to some ball games together, and he's just been so kind to me. I haven't really seen a whole lot. However, there was in December a Christian church, a Methodist church here in town that combines with the local Mormon stake. Every December they have a Christmas pageant, and they do singing and all the rest. And he made it a big point. He wanted me to come to that. He had never invited me to anything before, and I had never invited him to the church that I'm attending. But I went ahead and went to that because, out of friendship, I just wanted. His wife was in the choir, and they combined those two choirs to make one. I didn't agree with combining. I think that's a wrong way to go about things. But I felt, as part of the friendship, I would honor that. And then we had a chance to discuss it a little bit afterward. They mainly wanted to know, what did I think, and isn't it great how the Christian church here can get together with the Latter-day Saints and put it together. And I didn't get too deep into that. We haven't really had discussions in a deeper sense. We've kind of gone surface. He definitely knows who I am as far as being a Christian. He hasn't tried to push his religion on me, but for many, if you see the movie Mobsters and Mormons, it's actually a very humorous movie that was made in 2005. It shows the humorous side of that, and if you can understand a little bit of the culture of Utah, especially since 70% of the people in the state do officially belong to the church. You can go to Idaho, Montana, and other places as well where that's the same kind of way. But the movie is a comedy where this New Jersey goodfella who was involved with the mob ends up being secretly relocated to Utah as part of the witness protection program, and then how they deal with him. And you can kind of see in a stereotypical way of everybody trying to bring him casseroles and trying to get them to come to the church. And so the movie, created by Mormons, of course, tries to show the humorous side of that.
Well, when we come back, I wonder whether or not Eric's friendly Mormon neighbor knows what Eric does for a living, that is, works for Mormonism Research Ministry. Included in his article in the Christian Research Journal, he mentions Bill McKeever, who's a regular guest here on this program as well, and the head of Mormonism Research Ministry. He doesn't have a lot of the friendshipping going on when he goes out in public in Mormon country. We're talking about friendshipping and missionary dating on Mormonism. Eric Johnson, Associate for Mormonism Research Ministry, based in Draper, Utah, is our guest. He's co-author of the book Mormonism 101, and he's written an article in a recent edition of the Christian Research Journal titled Converting Them Softly with Their Words. Now, you don't have to engage in any kind of duplicitous friendshipping to tell your friends about what's going on here at Issues, etc. All you got to do is make sure that the information gets into your church bulletin. We've made it easy for you to do this. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click promote, and you will find there, down on the page, a paragraph each week for your church bulletin with an updated list of topics and guests, and most especially, how your friends can listen to Issues, etc. Issuesetc.org. Click support, copy and paste the text, send it to your pastor or your church secretary. Tell them to put it in the church bulletin. We'll be right back. Do all people share a common morality? Is natural law an errant teaching of the Roman Catholic Church? The Issues, Etc. book of the month for February is titled Natural Law, A Lutheran Reappraisal. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Natural Law by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Natural Law, The Issues, Etc. book of the month for February.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
The sharpest arrow in your apologetics quiver. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the 2011 International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights in Strasbourg, France.
The listeners to Issues, Etc. already have had contact through the program with lecturers who will be in Strasbourg this next summer. Craig Parton, myself, Dr. Minuj, Angus Minuj, Adam Francisco, and these lecturers are people who have defended the faith, who know how to defend the faith, and who are marvelous communicators. And so, if a listener to this program wants to learn how to present the case for Christianity in a secular situation, the 2 weeks in the French Rhineland with us would be an absolutely ideal way to achieve this.
You can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, July 5th through the 16th in Strasbourg, France, at apologeticsacademy.eu. Well, Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Mormon friendshipping and missionary datings coming up here in just a moment. Eric Johnson is our guest for Mormonism Research Ministry. In that vein, Eric, I'm curious, you talked about the Mormon neighbor that you have who continues to be a good friend, and sincerely so. Does he know where you work, Mormonism Research Ministry?
Oh, that's a good question, and that's one that's been really difficult. I've talked to a lot of people because this is one of the things. The ministry I am involved with is considered to be an enemy of the church by many, and so this is kind of a precarious position to be moving into a neighborhood where everybody's faithful. I would say I have not talked to him about it specifically. We've talked lightly about things we do. I do other things as well. I taught for many years, and so I do some online teaching, and my wife owns a photography company here in town, and so it's a private business, but we operate out of our home. So they know we do that. So he hasn't asked many penetrating questions. I know he sells insurance, and he kind of knows what I do, but it's been hard. I'll be honest. I'll tell you, Todd, it's just been hard because there have been times I just want to say that, but then I risk this friendship, which I'm actually enjoying. I enjoy the camaraderie of watching a ball game or talking over the fence. And he today it snowed like crazy. He lets me borrow his snowblower. I mean, those are just things that neighbors do, and so there's a little bit of a fear factor. And I've had advice on both sides. I've had some who have said, you need to tell them straight out, and others who have said, just leave it until the right time. And so now it's been 6 months, 7 months since I've been here, and we haven't had the discussion. He might know, but I don't think he does.
You did include in your article a short piece about Bill McKeever, your colleague there and a regular guest here on this program. Uh-huh. And Bill has – people know where Bill stands on this, and they know what he does for a living. Has he been friendshipped too much?
No, he hasn't been, actually. You kind of, when you see that movie, Mobsters and Mormons, you're kind of expecting casseroles the next day. And we got a note on our door the second day we were here that basically invited us to the local gathering at the ward. They had a barbecue or something, but we haven't had, I haven't had that really, and he has not, and he's been here for 7 years now. He thinks that he's had some neighbors who have avoided him. He's tried to befriend the neighbor across the street who just moved away recently, and he tried to do some fun things and invite him over kind of a thing, and it was really hard to do. So he thinks that people already know. But then again, he's had missionaries come to his house a number of times. I was over at his house a few months ago, and missionaries came over. And so he's not blacklisted. I haven't, in my 7 months, haven't had any missionaries. So, no, I think he would say, no, he doesn't think that he's been friendship, but probably people know more about him than they do about me. And his name is very searchable on the Internet. I mean, you type in Bill McKeever, you're going to get Bill. For me, there are many people named Eric Johnson, and so including a famous guitarist, and so it's hard to do a search on me. And that might be part of it as well.
Maybe your neighbor thinks you're the famous guitarist.
Maybe he does. I should pull out my guitar and see what he thinks.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Mormon dating policy that also tied into their proselytizing efforts. First, the restrictions that are placed upon Mormons, who they can date, how far it can go before the subject of Mormonism must be broached if the relationship is to continue. And then tell us a little bit about missionary dating.
Well, we have to understand that the Mormon Church is not monolithic in many ways. They'll say things and then they'll contradict themselves later, and nobody really pays much attention to it. Depends on when you're looking at the different books and magazines. Over the years, they have had prophets and apostles say, you shouldn't date at all a non-Mormon. You should only date within your faith. Spencer Kimball said that very clearly. Don't even have anything to do in that realm. But in today's world, that's not the same way. And there are many quotes that I put into the article that show, as long as the person is moral, one of the things that they will do at the local ward or stake center, oftentimes on Friday or Saturday nights, is have dances. And one of the things you're supposed to do is bring non-Latter-day Saints. And then they oftentimes get into relationships. They don't necessarily call it missionary dating, but I think in the Christian realm we understand what that means. Go ahead and get into a relationship if you like, but you must have them do the missionary lessons and make sure they understand the importance of our faith and how you cannot get married except to somebody in the temple. And only person who can get married in a temple is someone who is a faithful Latter-day Saint. So they'll use that to get into a relationship, and then once marriage, the word marriage gets popped in, well, you have to convert, and that's the only way they would actually marry you. And I have seen this happen so many times. I worked in a Christian high school for 17 years, and just this last year, back in 2010, I had two different students. One was a former student, and one was a senior, and they both were dating Mormons. And they met them at the dance, and now they were being pressured to join the church. And both of them knew that it wasn't the right thing to do. So they came to me, and they gave me their sob story about how they wanted to be in this relationship, but now they're getting this pressure. And I said, well, guys, this is what it is. If you want to continue in this relationship, this is what you've done to yourself. The Bible very clearly, I think, says we're not supposed to be unequally yoked, which I think really does start with dating, because dating is the first step in any kind of a marriage relationship. Both of them, fortunately, ended up breaking up with the girl because they knew they didn't want to join that church. But they went through a lot of pain that they never should have done. And then we have another case in 2010. Bill and I were in San Diego in April doing a symposium, a four-hour presentation, and sure enough, these two families came in. One was a Christian family and one was a Mormon family. And this couple, their kids had been in a relationship for well over a year. They were college students, and now the boy was talking about joining the Mormon church. So the parents of the boy, who were Christians, said, you come to this conference. Well, it was too late, and now he's attending BYU, and has converted to Mormonism so that he can keep the love of this girl. And whether or not he thinks it's true, sociologically, he's decided to make that choice to fit in with his personal habits or his personal love. And I think that's a very sad situation when you have to choose someone who's human over, I think, the ultimate creator.
What, theologically, with a couple minutes left here, theologically, why is it so crucial from the Mormon perspective that they only marry Mormons, and that if someone is going to marry a Mormon, they must convert for the temple wedding? In a nutshell, why is that part and parcel of their theology?
Oh, the major reason is because they cannot go on into eternity as an eternal family without getting married in the temple. I was just looking before this interview at an old book. It's 1954, Mark E. Peterson, who's a general authority at that time. It's written, it's called For Time or Eternity. And he's very clear that if you marry anyone outside of this church and don't get married in the temple, then you don't have the opportunity to move on in the next life where Mormons emphasize this eternal family structure. You don't get that. Well, that's a pretty big carrot out there, and so that's why most Mormons, and they're not supposed to date until they're 16. They take that very seriously still, but they'll go ahead and date other people perhaps, but they will not go down that aisle, most of them, without being able to marry someone in that temple that gives them the ability to have that eternal family.
So a young woman who would marry outside the Mormon religion would forfeit her, shall we say, Mormon status in the next kingdom. She may go to heaven, so to speak, but she's not going to be able to continue to propagate an eternal family. A young
right.
man who would marry outside of Mormonism, even though he may be a Mormon, would still make the same forfeit if he were to marry outside.
Yeah, what they are basically, you're right, they're going to forfeit that opportunity. Now, they can get married in the temple at a later time, but if they were to die after getting married in that kind of a situation, they cannot. The man has the priesthood authority to be able to call his wife up. Well, if they were not married in the temple to learn the special rites and the handshakes and the tokens that they learn in the temple, he's not going to be able to call her up by her proper name. And while he may, and there, heaven for Mormonism is made up of three levels. Everybody gets to go to one of the three levels, but the very highest level, called the Celestial Kingdom, is where you want to end up. And you can't get to the highest level of the Celestial Kingdom without being able to be married to someone here on this earth for time and eternity.
With only a minute here, then, what kind of cautions would you urge someone who is friends with the Mormon, without impugning motives at all as to what is going on there, what kind of cautions would you encourage in establishing a friendship with a temple Mormon?
And I would say it's nothing wrong with having friendships with Mormons. I think that's a great thing. I think if the dating situation obviously doesn't fit that way, but if you're just in a relationship, that's something that we can have friendships with other people and be very cautious that, oh, I want you to meet the missionaries. Okay, well, why? And I think those issues should come up because our faith is the most important thing to us. But a relationship, I don't believe, should be conditional based on my accepting your philosophy, and therefore we can remain friends. And that's what I appreciate about my neighbor. He hasn't put that restriction on me, and I'm not making it on him. When the issues come up, we'll certainly talk about them as our relationship continues on, but that's not the reason why we are friends.
Eric Johnson is Associate for Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah. He's co-author of the book Mormonism 101. He's written an article in a recent Christian research journal titled Converting Them Softly with Their Words. You'll find a link to Mormonism Research Ministry under the Listen on Demand page at our website, issuesetc.org. Eric, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd.
Well, when we come back, it's the remainder of Hour 2 on this Tuesday afternoon, the 8th of February. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Corey Moss will be our guest. We're going to talk about abortion and natural law. This is the basic question. When the Christian steps into the public square to debate abortion, whatever aspect of the debate he may take up, even its most basic elements as to when life begins, or even more basic than that, is abortion in any case, under any circumstances, to be considered tantamount to murder? Does he have to go into the public square equipped with his Bible passages and all his Christian doctrine and the say of the church? Does he have to present abortion as murder, essentially as an article of faith? Or are there reasonable and natural law arguments in favor of recognizing abortion for what it is, murder of a human being? We'll answer that question and others with Dr. Corey Moss of Concordia University, California, after this.
Well, I think that's a very good question.
Check out our new YouTube video, Good Question, issuesetc.org, and click support. Good questions, better answers. Issues, etc. Watch the short YouTube video, Good Question, today. Just go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Well, you know, that's a good question.
That's a good question.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues, etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues, etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues, etc. bumper or window sticker.
Casting Christ's net on the Internet. You're listening to Issues, etc.
Better safe than sorry.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
In response to new TSA security guidelines at airports, Ken Connor of the Center for a Just Society said, quote, "In this instance, President Obama is supporting a government infringement upon the personal privacy of millions of American travelers based upon an ambiguous and largely unquantifiable threat. The president has chosen to take the safe road. Better to err on the side of protecting life at the cost of a little personal privacy, right? Since 1973, the lives of 50 million unborn children have been sacrificed on the altar of personal privacy," unquote. One wonders if this analogy is lost on the president.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.